You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Tonight, we have an extremely important and profound conversation that needs to be had. Joining us is none other than our very own Madiha Mahmud, the Executive Director of Content Forum, or CMCF, as it is commonly known amongst us media practitioners, is a body that is regulated to observe and to see how they can provide appropriate consultations and enforce the code containing governing standards and practices in the realm of communications and multimedia industry. They operate out of the Act of the Communications and Multimedia Act. Some of the acts that needs to be upgraded include this one, in my opinion. But how do they do that and how do they go about that? So joining us is Madiha, talking about the kind of items that they're going to go through right now, including that of the public consultation of a new content code that is very much near the horizon. So, Madiha, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. I don't know whether I have surmised Content Forum accurately. Maybe you can share a little bit about the role of Content Forum right now.
That's good enough. But I guess I could just add that it is a self-regulatory industry body, because I think there's a lot of thoughts out there that CMCF or the Content Forum is just another government agency, for example. But we need to make it very clear that the members of the Content Forum are members of the industry as well as members of the community. So we've got broadcasters like Astro, we've got advertisers, we've also got civic groups and individuals from institutions of higher learning as well. So we're quite well represented in that sense.
Okay, the item that I want to talk to you include this, because some of the troubles that we've seen globally, including that of the US, is in the realm of them unable to self-regulate the kind of things that go on air, the kind of things that happen on social media. A lot of misinformation and disinformation takes place. There are clear evidences of election rigging, at least during the Donald Trump 2016 elections. All this stem from the kind of poor regulation or absence of regulation in terms of content when it comes to communications and multimedia. The issue here is, in Malaysia, as you rightly pointed out, it's self-regulating. How do we self-regulate? Because, you know, we have all the other laws in place, including that of the Defamation Act, Sedition Act. We used to have the ISA, but, you know, it just seems that people can't express their opinions freely, even though, you know, they're not transgressing any laws. Fahmi Reza, the renowned graphic artist, keeps on being called in by the cops because of his very provocative kind of satire of current affairs. So, yeah, as you can see, there's a lot of things going on right now. So how do we contextualize this to a point where we can move ahead in a safe environment while being able to express freely our thoughts, our ideas, our expressions, but at the same time try to stay within the limits of, I guess, societal norms? Is that the objective here?
That's exactly the objective. I think you've summed it up pretty well. And I believe
thank you very much for joining us. That's all that we have. But no, sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, well, the question is always about, you know, people don't want over censorship or state regulation. But self-regulation itself is this vital part of the global economy right now, especially when we're looking at industries that face continuous innovation, just like the communications and multimedia content industry. So state regulation, like legislation, executive orders, administrative rules, all these things, we don't believe, I mean, it's great, but we don't think it's the best way to go in this fast-growing content industry, because technology adapts so much faster that even the tech industry can't really keep up. So adding another layer of governmental bureaucracy would likely throttle innovation in that sense. But we do need to have that balance, because, as you know, complete freedom is also very much easily abused. Now, you talk about Fahmi Reza, and the reason why he keeps being called to the police station is likely because people are making complaints and making reports about him. And this is something that we need to see in self-regulation as well. We've got the content standards. We've got what we believe are the best practices for content, what you can and cannot put out there. And it's, again, a self-regulatory process where people can complain about you or make a report about you. I'm not really sure what's happening in Fahmi Reza's case specifically, but if you do see instances in social media where you believe that, you know, the freedom of speech has been abused to the point that it is breaking laws, then that's where the reporting comes in, and that's where self-regulation plays a part.
You know, a few years ago, I had a quarrel with the folks at IKEA because my children were queuing up. adults overtook the kids. I went up and I confronted these people. And then, you know, later on it was resolved very quickly. You know, my kids got to make their order. Everything went back just fine, happily. However, there was a third party who didn't know what happened, took pictures of me, of my kids, and then put it up on Facebook. And the hate that I got was astronomical. It suddenly became a racist thing. It suddenly became an issue of, you know, exposing my children. And I tried my best, right, to ask Facebook to bring it down. Not only was it slanderous, it's actually quite harmful to my kids. Facebook did nothing. According to them, it did not violate their, code of conduct or similar.
Community guidelines.
Yep. And then, of course, I had to make a police report. And then the guy pulled it down because it's slanderous. Do we really have to go to the police every time something happens online? I only took action because my kids were involved. You know, the kind of hate that I get every day on social media, your dad as well. I mean, I don't care, but sometimes it does bring about direct personal physical harm. So how do we move about from this? It's very tough.
I know, but this is a transition period for self-regulation. That's exactly what we want people to understand, that there are consequences to their actions. So yes, Facebook might have seen your post. I really wish I had seen that, by the way. They might see it as not breaching their community guidelines, and at the end of the day, you had to go to make a police report. But that's exactly the process. And hopefully, with people realizing that these things are something that the police will look at, such cases would be, it's more like a deterrent in a way. But yeah, police reports are still the way to go for these cases.
Okay, so that's the scene setting, I suppose. I want to ask you about the kind of refresh that you're looking for. What's the kind of thinking that you have right now when it comes to formulating the new content code? What's wrong with our current content code?
Okay. Well, first off, I just have to say that the first content code was drawn up way back in 2004. That was quite some time ago. And we did a revision in 2020, but only to address four things, which was privacy, streamlining ratings, optimizing parental controls, and regulating slimming ads, which was a concern back then. But when I joined the content forum, I felt that we need to have a holistic revamp of the entire code and to address the policy gaps that we see in content regulation based on all the technological advancements and societal developments that we have, things that we did not address in the previous revisions. I give you an example. We never would have predicted the influx of influencers like they are now and how influential they can be, and the fact that there is a growth of influencer marketing. And, you know, since Instagram was launched way back in 2010, we see that Instagram has become the leading social media platform. And I think about 35% of Malaysians are on Instagram. So there is an enormous consumer market, and brands are tapping into it by using influencers to push their products or services. Now, the problem that we see, or the challenge that we see we need to be addressing, is the fact that the very fact that influencers shape public opinion, the very fact that they have, you know, basically, yeah, shape public opinion and influence consumer behavior. Some irresponsible advertisers are exploiting this and manipulating influencers for them to flout advertising rules. For example, pushing cosmetic products that do not pass health regulations. So, and there are also influencers who, for the lack of the better word, hide their commercial arrangements with brands. So they pretend that their compliments on a product are actually complimentary instead of paid for. So in any parts of the world, disclosure of ads is necessary based on the simple principle of transparency and accountability, because consumers need to be able to make informed choices before they part with their hard-earned money. So that's one of the changes that we wish to put into the content code, or one of the areas, the new areas that we're addressing. A second one which might be of interest to you is the fact that we have a growing, I mean, you probably know this more than I do, that we have a growing Muslim market. And, you know, the global Muslim market size.
Sorry. Why would I know the Muslim market a little bit more than you do?
Anything with market, you probably know more than me. But, you know, it's been said that the Muslim market is supposed to grow for about $3.2 trillion by 2024. And Malaysia is at the top of the top 15 global Islamic economy. So, I mean, marketers around the world have agreed that faith influences consumer behavior. They make choices based on their faith, like investment choices, products to, you know, boycott. And, you know, people do make banking choices based on things like Sharia compliant savings or Islamic banking. But unfortunately, what we've seen happen is that there are irresponsible parties tapping into this growing Muslim market by selling goods and services with an Islamic gimmick, for the lack of a better word, and a gimmick which misleads consumers into thinking that purchasing their product comes with the promise of heavenly blessings, for example. So this phenomenon has not been adequately addressed in the content code, and it's one of the many revisions that we propose as well.
What happened to the whole concept or the notion of caveat emptor or buyers beware? I mean,
it's still there, but we do have to have the information, you know, make sure they have the information in order to know what they are supposed to be wary of, I suppose. Yeah.
But is it the role of the government or the regulator or a forum like yours to be that, you know, entity to provide that additional information? Shouldn't the onus be on the consumer themselves to find more information in their own right?
Yep, it is. Although the code is actually for the advertisers. It's again, based on the principle of no misleading advertising, which is everywhere, right? So misleading in this sense will also encompass misleading people in religious issues as well. Because unfortunately, there are people out there who might not be as open or experienced enough to understand that these things are actually scams or people trying to exploit their faith. So again, there is a necessity for us to have that in the code to make sure that at least advertisers themselves take that responsibility, not to cross that line. Because if they do, then, you know, as usual, if they have misleading ads or claims, they'll be subject to sanctions.
I just want to draw the parallel here. This is not something new that the government is doing. We've always had some sort of advertising code since forever.
Forever.
Yeah, it's just trying to reach out to the mass multimedia kind of reach. Am I right?
Yep.
Okay, the conversation should be on how would you guys enforce the code to be complied if it's self-regulatory? Do you have any, you know, legal outcome to or legal powers to compel, say for instance, the influencers that you speak of on Instagram to comply with the code? Can action be taken against them? Will stern warnings instead be issued and therefore no legal repercussions follow? How do we see this work?
All right, so for the content code, I'll just give you a general overview of how the regulatory process is, right, for self-regulation in content. So we've got creating the regulations where all the industry players, the community I was talking to you about, we come up with this content code, going through public consultations, making sure that it's developed. And we believe that guidelines and codes developed by self-regulation tends to be a little bit more practical and realistic. So content code. Then we have monitoring for compliance. We've got the content forum, but we're not the only ones doing the monitoring. All of us are supposed to regulate each other. So members of the industry, if you're industry players, you do monitor your competitors to make sure that they abide by the content code. And everything else that we see online or on TV or radio, we do that. We observe. If we feel that there's something that's breaching the content code, that's where we go to the third step, which is enforcing regulations. So within the content forum, we've got a complaints bureau. So what's done in this complaints bureau, which is presided by a former judge who's the chairman of the complaints bureau, and we've got representatives from each category in the industry as members of the complaints bureau. If a complaint comes in, then it is reviewed just like it is in any other case, and a result will come out whether that was a breach or not. If there was a breach, then there is an option to sanction. Of course, there are other options like giving out a warning and you know, a takedown notice or tell them to remove the offending content, but there are sanctions involved as well. Now, another thing that I should mention is the fact that the content code is, you know, as you know, we are designated under the Communications and Multimedia Act. That's where we actually derive our very existence. But the content code is also the instrument used to interpret the offences in the Communications and Multimedia Act, specifically Section 211 and 233, which I'm sure you're aware of, has things which say indecent, obscene, false, menacing, or offensive. So the content code is used to interpret this. So instead of leaving it in the hands of lawmakers, we determine what these mean. And by we, I mean you, me, industry players, members of the public. So that's why this public consultation is really important for us to get more feedback from people, because we feel that the more feedback we get from the community, the more likely the new content code reflects the standards of Malaysian society, which is the measurement we use to determine the guidelines and best practices in the code.
I think we got the hard, the easy part done. I want to go into the harder part right now, which is not about commercialization or the item of misrepresentation of advertising or influencers. Right. The big issue is very recent. We're talking about the Facebook's own research that has shown that there are a number of ways in which Instagram is harmful to as many as 20% of teenage girls using the app. Boys are also being affected, some as many as 3 in 5 teens being reported to have mental health issues, negative mental health issues, following the use of not just Instagram but all the other social media applications. We have seen how this has impacted the youth today. I have my own teenage daughter, 14-year-old. She's also going through some issues when it comes to Instagram. The problem is very much closer to home than you think. How would Content Forum approach this? I don't know whether this is a problem that needs to be resolved or how. I'm at a loss, so to speak. I don't even know how to ask you this question, to be frank. How do you see this issue?
Outside of my professional capacity, I am a parent as well. I've got boys. I've got a teenage boy as well. And I do see that what we can do, or first I have to acknowledge that there is definitely a problem, Instagram. Instagram is actually bringing back a lot of, throwback into issues that we used to face in our teens. I see a lot of my friends who have teenage girls are experiencing eating disorders because of the fact that they're getting so much idealized images of women on Instagram and influencers and stuff like that. So aside from body image, aside from mental health issues that are stemming from the things that they get from social media, the number one thing we need to understand is that we all have to play a role. As in, self-regulation also means utilizing our parental control over things like social media. A lot of social media apps are actually not meant, or is it there? They don't allow children below a certain age to have an account. But what happens is a lot of parents may not understand or may not see what you see, what you and I see, and that those social media apps, exposure on those social media apps, especially unsupervised, could be a problem for the kids. So one of the things that we do at the Content Forum is also to increase this kind of awareness. We also help guide people who come to us with complaints about social media on how to make those reports, how to use simple functions like block and unfollow and mute. You'd be surprised at how many people who don't actually know those functions exist. And it's also about us making sure that we reach out to the right people, which are parents, to have the necessary conversations that they need with their children before letting them all out onto the internet. This is something that I constantly repeat. I feel like a parrot, but it's really,
Repeat all you need, all you want, because I need this kind of repetition, right? Not many people are aware of these items. The issue that I have right now, for instance, is that Instagram, was crazy enough to even include in their forward planning for 2022 an Instagram for teens. I mean, how crazy is that? Of course, they've scrapped that idea. But the thing is, if we have to take cues from the US and the US regulations because, Instagram and Facebook and the lot is from there, we don't have quite the power to dictate what happens in our home country because Instagram isn't from Malaysia. So we're always trailing behind the regulations that is being posed by the US. And the US is not, I guess, the beacon of hope when we think about regulations. They still have gun laws, which is as archaic as the 17th century law, that we think about in the past. So are we at the mercy of these big tech companies, the mercy of, say, the US or China for TikTok and ByteDance? Where do we stand in terms of taking control of what we can impose upon the social media companies?
Really not much. I mean, just to be very frank, we don't have much clout and jurisdiction to control these foreign platforms. I mean, they are hardly able to control it themselves from where they are, and these platforms emanate from them, right? So the only thing we can do is whatever is within our power to do. And that is, I don't know, self-regulation. Again, you're talking specifically about children, they're really, I tell you from the conversations I've had whilst I've been in the Content Forum, there really needs to be higher awareness among us parents about what children can get up to online and the fact that, you know, we as parents really need to step up and supervise. It's a life skill, going into the World Wide Web. It's just like teaching your kids to swim before you jump out them into the ocean, right? So it's the same thing. You need to be able to equip your children with the necessary knowledge and the precautionary measures that they need in order for them to navigate the World Wide Web. And I think that's sort of kind of missing right now. So the most that we can do in the content forum is to increase that awareness, which we have been doing, and we hope to accelerate even more once this whole content code registration is done with as well.
So what's the timeline like when it comes to the completion of this bit of the revamp of the content code?
Right. So the public consultation was initially meant to last until the 9th of November, but we've received news from MCMC yesterday that we should be able to extend it a little bit longer, especially given the fact that we've been getting pretty good feedback from the public on matters which were not even thought of. For example, responsible reporting of suicide news. So that has been consistently lobbied in the feedback we've received. So we might have to consider that as part of the draft as well. So I would surmise it's around mid-November. I don't have an exact date yet, but it should be around that.
And of course, the public can still continue to provide feedback, right? I mean, it's still open right now?
Yes, of course. Okay. It is. I mean, just head to contentforum.my, you'll be linked right there. And I have to say, you know, a lot of people think a public consultation is going to be so much paperwork. No. There's only one public consultation paper that you need to look at. If you don't want to read it, we are hosting town halls as well. So you can just jump into a town hall and we'll explain exactly what those changes are. And then fill up the questionnaire, which shouldn't take more than 15 to 20 minutes of your time. And that's how you can be a part of setting standards for the content industry in Malaysia.
Fantastic. We need every help that we can get, because you're right, we don't have much hold on all these either social media apps or advertisers or influencers, but we do have control over what we can do or say. Self-regulation is very key. We'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with Content Forum of Malaysia. Thanks for staying on with us. Joining us online right now is Mediha Mahmud, the Executive Director of Content Forum, or CMCF. Mediha, I hate to ask you this, but you were talking about how parents can get involved with their children in terms of, you know, having a frank conversation, the kind of frank and honest kind of skills that they must have. Yeah, I hate to ask you this, but would you share with us some of the two or three things, perhaps some of the boomer audiences that we have right now, you know, the how-to, so to speak? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I can only speak from my experience and what I've been reading about and what I've practiced with my sons. Number one, we have to have that communication thing going on. You have to talk about issues. You have to talk about things. Age appropriate, of course. Like, for example, how do I say this? Let's say Squid Game. Am I allowed to mention names of content I should write?
We are partners, yeah. Squid Game is fine. Yeah, I watched it. I binge-watched it. I spent the entire Sunday morning, the entire 9 episode, and I finished it. I'm very familiar with it. And go ahead, you can mention. Not a problem, Mediha.
Okay, so this is on classifications of content. Squid Game is a big thing. And if you're a kid, you're under 18, if you're on Discord or if you're playing games, even if you're playing Minecraft, somebody might mention Squid Game or even Roblox or whatever. So they're curious. My sons who are 10 and 15 and all that, they're curious about what it's all about. They're asking to watch it, just like they asked to watch Deadpool. But these are movies which are clearly classified as 18. So instead of, you know, some parents who go, that you just can't watch it, that's it. You need to have a conversation of why they can't watch it. Why are some movies classified as 18 and why they need to wait until they're at that age to watch it? So these are conversations that we need to have as well. And even online, my boys, they do have supervised access to the internet. They don't get access to any devices after when they go to bed, because as you all know, when you're in bed, if you have a device, your sleep is bound to get interrupted. So that doesn't happen. So that's one thing I do. No devices at bedtime. But also the fact that we have conversations about what's on the internet. Things like violent content, adult theme content, which age appropriately, I have to have that discussions with them. The 4-year-old, the 5-year-old may not need to know as much as the 15-year-old, for example. So it often takes a lot of effort, actually, as parents. There's a lot of work that we need to do. It's really hard parenting with the digital world. A lot of things that your kids might be exposed to that you yourself were not exposed to until you were much older. I mean, I speak for myself there. So it's a conversation that we need to have. And another contoh I can give you is, you know, when people talk about issues like LGBTQ, for example. And then we have situations where a lot, you know, when I was still with Astro and in regulatory, a lot of people did complain that we shouldn't have any content that shows portrayals of LGBTQ. And then there was calls to censor, to ban. But my position is that we live in a world where our children are exposed to this, even if they're not watching TV, they're online. And even if they're not, they're going to go out in the real world where communities like this exist and live among us. So we need to have that conversation. It's an uncomfortable conversation, apparently, for a lot of people, but it is a conversation that we need to have. And I think every parent needs to be aware of that as well.
Well, I don't understand why. No, you're right. This can be very uncomfortable for most parents, but I just don't understand why. In fact, I think that, you know, children are far smarter than they look, and they are able to understand, you know, mature conversations better than you think they could. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, and the more open and frank you are with them, the less they are going to, you know, sneak behind your back and ask their friends, which is an even more dubious source of information.
Absolutely. That's exactly why I have these conversations with my kids, because I had friends during my time who had really weird thoughts of what certain things are all about. So, you know, they're not the best sources, peers. So it always should come from us parents. And I guess the more practical example or practical advice I can give when it comes to parents and their kids going online is that there are so many parental control softwares out there that you can explore. There are some which are really, really strict and rigid. You know exactly what they're typing if you want to know that detail. There are those that just allow you to see what sites your kids visit or block certain sites, you know, things like that. It's, you know, you need to carve out some time where you sit down and make sure that you know what, you know, it's like work, what your KPI is for your kids, what you want them to be exposed to, what you want to protect them from. And do a little bit of research and maybe spend a little bit of money, although there are a lot of free softwares out there as well, where you can have that kind of supervisory and monitoring outlook on what your kids do on the internet.
I don't know. I don't think that any kind of censorship is good. I think that having frank and honest conversations is a lot better. I think they own up to what they...
That's number one.
Yeah, I think it's easier, you know. They own up to what sites they visit, and we have a frank and honest conversation, because, look, you can't censor all information. Some will get through anyway. Looks like you have your work cut out for you, and I'm not going to be envious on what you do, because you're going to be... I mean, controlling influencers, that's the easy bit. How about Instagram causing mental health? You know, that kind of thing. That is the bigger issue.
But that's the thing. Anyway. You also need to understand how Instagram, when you go, you scroll through Instagram, you need to be also self-aware of how it makes you feel. I mean, I've got Instagram accounts which I've unfollowed because I recognize that I'm feeling envy from it, or I'm not feeling good after I look at it. So self-regulation also comes with that, some self-awareness of how content makes you feel and what you should do about it. Like if you have a Twitter account and you've got people who are tweeting you nasty stuff, I mean, there's nothing wrong, nothing embarrassing about unfollowing them or blocking them. It's absolutely fine. It is self-regulation at work.
Fantastic. I block so many people. You have no idea. I have a whole list. And it's exportable through XLS. So, I, you know, in case somebody else wants my block list account, you can just ring me up or I can just share with you that block list. But Madia, thanks very much for this very frank and honest conversation. I wish you all the best. Again,
thank
if you, if people watching this conversation wants to join into how the new content code is going to be formulated, just head on to the Content Forum website and you can join and be part, or be an active member of society in terms of what can and cannot be said on online and everywhere else using the multimedia and communications power that Content Forum has behind them. But yeah, thanks very much. That was our conversation with the Executive Director of Content Forum. If you missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com. Look for Notepad over there. Look for CMCF. Look for Content Forum. Till then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.